Listening friend, it's a packed program with another Moody special titled Secrets from the Garden. So today and tomorrow's edition of Mark and Friends, you'll hear this broadcast in its entirety, and I'll have to wait till Wednesday when co-host Pastor Jason Schiffo is in the studio to talk about the wonderful Family Life Weekend to Remember marriage conference I attended with Holly and some other friends. Then the Gaither vocal band, Bill Gaither, turned 79 on Saturday night. Got to hear them. The Singing Men concert last night, fabulous. Welcome to the Great News Radio listening family, all the Bellflower and surrounding community folks that came out and enjoyed a great concert with the Singing Men. And we'll have some giveaways on Wednesday, but today and tomorrow's program is 55 minutes in its entirety, and so I'll play it all. We'll be preempting SRN News, and we'll start with this creative, dramatic vignettes with some original music, with the sounds from Israel, as we walk through those final days with Jesus. So I hope you can stay with me today and tomorrow for the Monday and Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends. And once broadcast, both programs will be archived at greatnewsradio.org.
What was it like to breathe the curly smoke of olive oil lamps, to trace the shadows playing on the wall of the upper room? What was it like to step out onto a moonlit landscape, the air heavy with moisture, to hear the sounds of crunching stone and brush as you hike down into the Kidron Valley? What was it like? The conversation between Jesus and his closest friends. They've just celebrated the Passover meal, typically a joyful festivity, yet there's something different about this night. What was it like? Listen carefully. You can almost hear the disciples.
It's so impressive, even in the dark.
The temple always is. Look at the way those torches reflect off the walls.
Yeah, it just looks so massive, even from here.
Speaking of massive, how about those mansions we just walked by on the western hill?
Yeah, what do I have to do to live in one of those? It's a good life, for sure.
They were pretty nice, weren't they, Jesus?
Hmm? Oh, yeah, yes, yes.
But I'm thinking of the conversation you had with that rich young ruler at the other side of the Jordan, right?
You have a mind for details, John.
Oh, not like Andrew. He can actually quote what you said to that guy, word for word. Andrew, do it.
Ready for this, Master?
I'm listening, Andrew.
All right. You said, everyone who has given up houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or children or property for your sake will receive 100 times as much in return and will inherit eternal life.
It is so true, every word of it. I wouldn't have kept walking with you then or now if I didn't believe it.
Yeah, me too.
Hey, anybody else notice that when we got to the bottom of the Kidron Valley a few minutes ago, the darkness, it seemed, I don't know, extra dark. Everything in the valley, it looks spooky.
Elise, we have a full moon, good vision further up the slope.
Yeah, we got solid footing here on the path.
Yeah, even so, something is just giving me the creeps. Can't quite put my finger on it, though.
Looks like we're almost there.
Figures the master would take us here.
Gethsemane. You can always tell by the weird-looking trunk on that one olive tree.
Yeah, lightning must have cut the thing in half.
So, why do I feel like there's a storm coming tonight?
Moody Radio presents Secrets from the Garden, a return to Gethsemane. It's still there, at the foot of the Mount of Olives, the Garden of Gethsemane. It's smaller than most people envision, about 4,000 square feet, the size of two typical American homes. An iron fence with a Byzantine flair surrounds eight gnarled olive trees. Staring into the sun glint illuminating their silvery leaves, the sounds of Jerusalem's bumper-to-bumper traffic and the noise of fellow tourists somehow fades away. For the disciples, Gethsemane was a familiar place. Yet this night, the disciples faced unfamiliar feelings. Dr. Paul Wright is president of Jerusalem University College.
They come to this place that they know. John says that they've come before. on the slopes of the Mount of Olives. It's late at night. The Passover meal would probably run till midnight, something like that. The days have been long. Judas is left, and they're down in number, and I think they're worried. I think they're full of anticipation. I think they don't know what to think, some of them, and just tired as well.
Uncertainty, anticipation, anxiety. That's the disciples as they arrive at Gethsemane. Where Christ likely would have taken them is generally recognized today as the Grotto of Gethsemane. Tradition says this natural cave, where they probably had spent many nights before, is the place where Christ urgently asked the disciples to keep watch with him and pray. But what is Jesus thinking as he directs his friends to stop inside this cave housing an olive press? Menno Kalischer is pastor of the Jerusalem Assembly House of Redemption.
If you know what happened to the olive when you press on it, you squeeze the juice out of it. And here in a place where Christ himself cries blood, squeezed and tested for us. He is the one who is being tested right now. He is under a test, pressed. And here in this place, where you press, where the Holy Spirit needs to do the hardest job ever, symbolized by oil, our Lord is passing a test successfully so we may have life.
At Gethsemane, simile meets irony. But to understand either, we need a bit of insight into this place and its process. Amar Nicola is a guide with Nazareth Village.
Gethsemane comes from the word Gat Shmanim in Hebrew. Gat Shmanim, it means an olive press.
That pressing begins with an enormous millstone that crushes olives, creating an olive paste. You're hearing the sounds of an actual olive press, just like those used in the time of Christ. The residue from the olive paste is then placed into woven baskets to be pressed, as we hear from our guide at Nazareth Village.
After the crushing part, we come to the part of pressing. What we crush, we fill inside of baskets made of palm leaves. We put this piece of filter on the face of the vat, like that. Then we get all the baskets, and we just lower the beam of the presser. And later on, we use the stones. And every stone, we have three large, heavy stones, and every stone is connected to a winch. We put the handle like that, rotate it, and use the weight of the stone, pressing.
In the traditional olive oil process, there are three different pressings, each exerting enormous pressure, each yielding a different quality of oil. Following the gospel accounts, it seems obvious that each pressing correlates with the three seasons of prayer that Christ had in the garden. But that's getting ahead of the story.
This is far enough.
There's your place. There's the press over there.
Yeah, Gethsemane, the olive oil press.
Brothers, let's maybe settle down here for a moment. Hmm? We'll rest a little.
Oh, sure, Jesus. Now, why not?
You guys sound winded. Coming out of the valley, I thought I was going to have to carry a couple of you.
A lot of moisture in the air tonight, Thomas. Tough breathing for some of us.
Either way, it seemed like we were going slower tonight. We've done this walk dozens of times.
Thomas is right. We were walking slower. What's going on with Jesus, Simon? He seems disturbed.
I don't know. He seems preoccupied. But focused. Very focused.
Peter?
Yeah, yes, Rabbi?
Did you follow me, please?
Of course. Say the word and I'm with you. Lead on. Wherever.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter. James, John, would you two join us as well, please?
Yeah, of course, Master.
Ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah,
here we go.
The rest of you, I ask you to pray for me. My soul is heavy. I need you to pray.
Well, of course.
And we'll be back before too long.
When Jesus calls Peter, James, and John to walk with him further into the garden, we wonder what the other disciples might have been thinking. For example, was there any sense of jealousy in those left behind? Dr. Charlie Dyer is professor at large of Bible for the Moody Bible Institute. An Old Testament scholar, he has traveled to the Holy Land more than 80 times.
We know there were times in the past when Jesus would take the three disciples, when he went up on the Mount of Transfiguration. So was there some jealousy among the disciples that there were three who seemed to be his favorites? There may have been. But it wasn't unusual for Jesus to take those three and go off by themselves.
The gospel accounts tell us that Jesus, having invited the company of Peter, James, and John, took them only a small distance away, a stone's throw, according to Luke. This location is generally recognized today as the actual Garden of Gethsemane. Its most distinguishing visual then and now, a cluster of olive trees. The Gethsemane trees of today were not there at the time of Christ. Historian Flavius Josephus reports that all the trees around Jerusalem were cut down by the Romans for their siege equipment before they captured the city in AD 70. However, it's possible that today's Gethsemane trees are descendants of one that was in the garden at the time of Christ. How so? When an olive tree is cut down, shoots will come back from the roots to create a new tree. The Bible records that Jesus walked a bit beyond the three disciples to pray alone. What happened next seems unthinkable. The disciples fell asleep. Dr. Charlie Dyer.
They're tired. It's been a long day. It's been an exciting day. They've had a full meal. They're in a dark spot. Only the moon is lighting it up. And in their minds, they're not sufficiently concerned about Jesus to have that overcome their sense of sleepiness. So the fact that they fell asleep tells me they're worried, but not to the extent that Jesus knows what's coming.
But surely the disciples cared about the intense burden Jesus was carrying. Surely they would want to offer him their emotional and spiritual support, wouldn't they? Jamie Janos is content strategy manager for Moody Bible Institute.
It seems like they would want to give that they would be there and that this would be the primary thing on their mind. And it is for some. But I feel like we wonder a little bit if they didn't really realize that the depth of his request or didn't realize what short amount of time they had left with him. That they didn't take it as seriously as they should have. I think sometimes maybe we're preoccupied with our own thoughts and our own agenda, and we don't really hear what's behind somebody's request to us. That could be.
I think they're showing up because Jesus asked them to, and the reason I say that is what happens when they get alone by themselves? They fall asleep three times. They are clueless as to what's really happening. It's not impacted them emotionally, and they're just tired. The minute they get into a quiet, lonely spot, they're gone.
So let's reset the stage for the scene when Christ asked Peter, James, and John to be with him at his moment of greatest need.
James.
Yes?
John.
Master.
And Peter.
Yes, Jesus.
Come with me, if you would.
Sure, Jesus. Anything.
Good.
Lord, now that it's just us, what is going on?
You're not yourself. It's like you've seen a ghost.
My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death.
Oh, but Jesus.
What do you mean grieved to the point of death?
Remain here. Keep watch with me, please.
Yes.
Please pray for me.
What is going on with Jesus?
My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Let it pass, Father.
Oh, Father.
Yet not as I will, but as you will.
Peter.
Master.
No.
James. James.
What?
So, you men could not keep watch with me for 1 hour. Please keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing. Oh, but the flesh is weak.
From Moody Radio, you're listening to Secrets from the Garden, A Return to Gethsemane. At this point in the story, the medical doctor who wrote the Gospel of Luke includes a traumatizing detail. As Jesus prayed, he sweat drops of blood. But what does that mean? Cesar Fletus was born in Paraguay and serves as a guide at Jerusalem's Garden Tomb.
It was an excruciating stress. He experienced a physical pain. The brokenness he was experiencing in his heart was transpired into the external expression in his body, that he was sweating blood.
Nazar Tuma is a born-again Arab who pastors a church in Nazareth. He suggests that the drops of blood were the direct result of the pain that Jesus was feeling.
The pain is more emotional in Jesus because he could see the picture, the large picture. He could see the bigger picture than others would see because he could see the cross. He could see the trial. He could see the betrayal of his disciples. And we always think of Judas, but we all know that everybody flee. No one stayed there. Even Peter, when he was following him, he was still following him from a distance. And that was more painful to Jesus. I think when we are in pain, we would want someone to stand and encourage us. And if you look around you and you are alone, that's very painful. And Jesus went through all of that alone. And I think this was his physical pain.
Once again, Dr. Charlie Dyer.
I think there's several things that tell us Jesus' emotional needs that evening. The drops of blood. First blood ever shed wasn't the blood on Calvary. It was actually the blood shed by Jesus in the emotional impact time of praying, knowing what's coming ahead. It's Jesus asking his disciples to surround him in prayer, knowing that any help that he can get going before the Father would be needed and appreciated. We learn a lot about Jesus' emotional stress at that time. Think about it. You've been a perfect communion, perfect fellowship with God the Father forever. You've never known sin in your life, and you're about to be separated from the Father and have all the sin of the world placed on you. That's what Jesus was struggling with emotionally at that time, and he wanted the disciples to support him during that time in his humanity.
But the ultimate source of those drops of blood that Christ sweat was likely more spiritual in nature.
Now, his spiritual pain would be because of his innocence, because he is righteous, because he didn't commit any sin, because he didn't commit any injustice. All of that together would make him think of you and me, because if he's going to go all the way, he's going to go for us. He's going to do it for us. He emptied himself.
Pastor Menno Kalischer underscores that extreme stress creates extreme conditions in the human body, well attested to on the battlefield and other life arenas.
I know that in times of big distress, the body behaves in a way that you would not dream. Again, nothing compared of my life to the moment of Jesus before death. But when you hear soldiers coming from the battlefields in situations where they see death in front of their eyes, in situations where it's or you or him, in a split of a second you need to shoot, or you know that or death or jump 10 meters or do things that on a regular life you will never dream to do. When we speak about fear, go to speak with people who came from the Holocaust. Go to speak to people that have seen the death in their eyes, and they'll speak about sweat and smells you and I have met only in movies and in books. We never tasted it or experienced it.
But the biblical account of Christ sweating drops of blood also has a factual bearing in medical accounts. Dr. Walt McCord is an assistant professor in the Moody Theological Seminary.
There's a great journal of the American Association of Medicine, a JAMA journal article on the physical death of Jesus Christ. And in that, they talk about what exactly happened, all the different pieces, what happened at crucifixion. And they talk about a condition that happens that literally there are times when you can be so stressed that the capillaries begin to burst under the skin. And then that blood that's just subcutaneously begins to seep out through your sweat pores. And so I see this as literal. This journal article that was done by a doctor and a pathologist, as they talked through what happened, they believe, and I would too, that Jesus literally, under the pressure of that moment, maybe more pressure than any man has ever faced, physically, of course, but more than that, spiritually. I can't even begin to imagine that God the Son, who in all eternity had been joined with the Father, knew that he was about to be, as it were, have the back of the Father turned to him as God laid on Jesus the sin of us all. And because of that, the Godhead that has something that had never happened, communion and fellowship was broken. As Jesus knows that's coming, what kind of agony is that? I can only begin to voice it, cannot begin to imagine what that involved.
The truth is, we will never be able to fully grasp the agony Walt McCord reminded us of, the ultimate despair that Christ experienced alone in the garden. Again, Menno Kalischer.
We are human beings, sinners. He is absolutely pure. Sin have never entered into him. Knew no sin. Understood perfectly what it means to drink the wrath of God. We have a small pin in the finger and we shout, "Oh, we suffer!" Come on, it's a big joke. The person took the coldness of God. The one who knew love, the one who didn't know anything else, the face of God was away from him. He carried the wrath of God. And it's something that we will never, ever be able to paint in the full pictures. Never, ever.
So there he was, the God-man, sweating drops of blood at Gethsemane. And when you think about it, it almost makes sense.
When he tastes the real wrath of God, the real suffer, the real results, the real death in all its colors upon himself, knowingly, inch by inch, millimeter by millimeter, second by second. That's why when he said he sweat like blood, that shows how much his body was so much involved in it, how much he suffered for you and me.
Against the emotional blackness, but relative quiet of Gethsemane, a larger, noisier troop had assembled. They were marching straight toward the olive grove where Christ was praying and his disciples were sleeping. All but one of the disciples, that is. You'll recall that Judas had long since left the upper room. Perhaps the fragrance of the sauce he had dipped his bread into with Christ was still on his hand. We'll never know. But we do know what was on his mind, a mission.
Seneca.
Yes, Captain?
We're getting ready to head off the city gate and down into the valley. Tell the cohort that silence is essential.
Yes.
No more marching. We'll break up the cadence and move quietly.
Yes, sir.
I have no intention of letting this troublemaker or his band of followers make sport of us or slip away through the olive grove.
Yes, sir. I'll pass the word immediately.
Then go find Judas. Bring him up here.
Right, sir.
So, Judas, you're sure you can identify him in the dark?
Avner. How many times have we talked about this?
Keep your voice down. The Romans will hear us.
Show some respect to a temple guard, Judas. He's just trying to be certain. We've asked the Romans for their help, and they mean business.
Nockham's right. After all, you want to be sure you live to enjoy those 30 pieces of silver of yours, don't you, Judas?
Look, Avner, Nockham, we chose tonight because I know exactly where he will be. Besides, it's a full moon.
But even with a full moon, Jesus and his followers could be hiding in the dark. Olive trees, tombs, mounds of dirt. Might be tough to see.
There's no room for error.
You! Are you Judas?
Yes, sir.
Captain Cassian orders you up front with him. Now!
So, you're Judas?
Yes, sir.
Well, Judas, you're up front here with me until we get right up to the band of rebels. Then it's you, all by yourself. You better deliver on your promise.
You'll have no trouble knowing which one you're here to capture.
I know I won't. To me, one dead Jew is as good as another. Make sure you give me reason to keep you alive.
From Moody Radio, it's an Easter special. Secrets from the Garden, a return to Gethsemane. For some reason, perhaps it's simply budget, most of the movies that depict Christ's passion story show a relatively small band of guards and soldiers. We see a few dozen, maybe 50 or 60. But Dr. Charlie Dyer says whether or not Hollywood chooses to pay for all those extras or not, history records the group that marched by night was in no way small.
Yeah, we tend to think of the band as being small. You have 20, 50, maybe 70. I believe the band was probably numbering in the hundreds. We know that there were the guards from the temple who were there, the local police who watched over the Temple Mount. We know there were a few representatives from the high priest, the scribes and the Pharisees, who were along probably as the leaders. But more than that, we're told that Judas was there with the cohort. Well, a Roman cohort was initially composed of 600 men. It was six groups of 100 men each. Now, sometimes they didn't staff a cohort fully, but even if it was understaffed, you know, 60 or 80 men, you're looking at 400 to 500 to 600 Roman soldiers backing this group. This was a major military operation heading out from the Sheep Gate down into the Garden of Gethsemane.
Dr. Walt McCord.
We do know that they're being led by Judas, that that he is coming. We know that they're armed. It's a large crowd. The Greeks talks about it. It's not just a few people. There's a large crowd. They're armed. They're armed with swords and clubs. We know that they're sent from the chief priests, so they have the moniker, the imprint of the religious authority and also the political authority.
The concentration of so much military hardware was almost odd, given the entirely peaceful ministry of Jesus. What exactly did these tough soldiers fear from the one who called himself the Son of Man?
The scriptures tell us clearly they feared the multitudes.
Dr. Bill Schlegel is associate professor of Bible at the Master's College Israel Bible Extension. He spoke to us just outside of Jerusalem.
There were many people that backed Jesus. This would be a kind of a slang way to say there. He had many supporters at this time. The deal between Judas and the high priest was to hand Jesus over in the absence of the multitudes. I mean, that's what they want to do. That's what they feel they must do. Matter of fact, they weren't even going to arrest him at the festival until probably Judas comes and shows up, and they say, okay, now we can get him in the absence of the multitudes. They feared the multitudes. That's the simple answer. So they're going to show up with a band, an armed band, because they're probably uncertain how many of Jesus' followers will be there. Another aspect is they know something about Jesus. They know that he's a miracle worker. And the average officer is not going to take any chances with somebody that many people probably believe that if he wasn't pulling out these miracles off truthfully, he was somehow conjuring them up. They weren't going to fool with him.
Pastor Nazar Tuma.
I'll jump in here. We'll continue with this broadcast tomorrow on the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends. If you missed a portion, it is archived at greatnewsradio.org, greatnewsradio.org. This is a Moody special titled Secrets from the Garden, and we'll pick up right here tomorrow on the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.